I call the meeting of March 25th, 2026, meeting of the House Public Safety Committee to order. A quorum is present. Before we beginning our meeting, I want to remind everyone that the committee chair maintains control of this hearing, and I have the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your seat is prohibited. If you require any accommodations, please speak with our sergeant staff identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. If you received an entrance ticket, please retain it as may be required for re-entry if you leave the room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Thank you to the Sergeant at Arms who are present for helping maintain decorum in the committee room. Representative Feist, have you had a chance to review the minutes of the March 24th, 2026 meeting?
I have, and I move the minutes.
Representative Feist moves the approval of the March 24th, 2026 minutes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the minutes of the March 24th meeting are approved. We have a very busy agenda today. We'll be taking up House File 3990, the committee's policy bill package, at the end of the hearing. So I am asking testifiers and members to keep your comments very brief and on point. The first bill on our agenda today is House File 4371. Chair Lee, welcome to Public Safety, and I see you're at the testifiers' table. I will move House File 4371 before the committee with a recommendation that it is re-referred to the General Register. Chair Lee, please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 4371. In the interest of time, I will turn it over to the legislative auditor. This is a bill from the legislative auditor, and it's being carried bipartisanly in the House and in the other body. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Judy Randall, legislative auditor. Thank you very much for taking time to hear this bill. As you all know, the Office of the Legislative Auditor audits the state's financial statements, and that requires us to get access to data of all types, including federal tax information. This coming year, the federal government will require anybody who accesses federal tax information to have been fingerprinted, to have a background check and conduct fingerprints. And so this law, this change in law, simply adds OLA to entities that can do fingerprinting for the purposes of accessing FTI, federal tax information. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any other testimonies. Members, are there any questions for the testifier or Chair Lee? With that, closing comments, Chair Lee.
I just want to say thank you again, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity and appreciate all of your support.
I renew my motion to House File 4371 be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries and House File 4371 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Lee.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Randall. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4317. Chair Nash, please come to the testifiers' table. I will move House File 4317 before the committee with the recommendation that is re-referred to the General Register. There is an amendment to the bill, but we will have the author present his bill and then take up the amendment. Chair Nash, please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is very similar to the bill that you did last year, allowing the State Patrol to issue surplus badges to troopers. This will allow police chiefs and sheriffs to do the same if they so choose. And I believe there is an amendment that would be fine to take at this moment.
The amendment is A2. Chair Nash, to your amendment.
Or Chair Mueller.
Chair Mueller, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Nash, for the bill and for your discussion about this amendment. So the amendment does two things. We just wanted to make sure that somebody who left under sort of dishonorable circumstances wouldn't be able to get the badge and then use it, like pretending like they were still law enforcement. So that was the first part of the amendment. And then the second part is just to make sure that those surplus badges are not their active badge anymore, that they have a different active badge. And so that's why we asked that to be decommissioned in that. So I think it's considered a friendly amendment and appreciate the back and forth with it. Thank you.
Chair Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Chair Mueller, we did work on this together. We agreed that this was just fine to put onto the bill. And I would accept the amendment with no reservations.
Any other discussion? All in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. Chair Nash, closing comments.
Thank you.
I remove my motion that House File 4317, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and House File 4317 is re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you,
Chair Nash. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2817. Representative Knutson, please come to the table with your testifier. I will move House File 2817 before the committee. The fiscal note came back showing cost to the state, so we will be laying this bill over. Representative Knutson, when you get arranged, please begin your testimony.
Hello, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 2817. It has long been understood that firefighters, should a firefighter tragically die in the line of duty, that the state would take care of their family by providing a one-time benefit payment through the Department of Public Safety. However, statute only explicitly references that this benefit applies to full-time and volunteer firefighters. This bill adds part-time and paid on-call firefighters to the statute so that it's clear that if someone dies as a firefighter in Minnesota in the line of duty, regardless of whether they are full-time, part-time, paid on-call, or volunteer position, that they know that the state recognizes the sacrifices that they make to keep us safe and will help care for the loved ones should the unthinkable happen. In greater Minnesota, a majority of our firefighters are paid on-call firefighters. Out of the 471 different departments in our state, 365 are paid on-call. Members, at its core, this bill aims to ensure that we take care of those families, of the families of those that put their lives on the line to keep the rest of us safe. I'd like to turn it over to my testifier.
Please have your testifier identify themselves for the record and begin the testimony.
My name is Mike Wenshaw. I'm the fire chief of the Hopkins Fire Department.
Begin your testimony, sir.
All right, thank you, Chair Novotny, Chair Mueller, and members of the committee for hearing this bill. And thank you, Representative Knutson, for authoring it. My name is Mike Wenshaw. I'm the fire chief of the city of Hopkins. The Hopkins Fire Department is a combination fire department with 14 career firefighters and 19 paid on-call firefighters. I am here in behalf of the Minnesota Fire Association Coalition, which is comprised of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, the Minnesota State Fire Departments Association, the Minnesota Chapter of Arson Investigators, and the Minnesota Fire Marshals Association. Together, we represent more than 700 fire chiefs and 23,000 firefighters in the state of Minnesota. As Representative Knutson stated, we are seeking to ensure that every firefighter in Minnesota who faces risks every time they respond to a call is eligible for the benefits provided by DPS for line of duty deaths. Right now, the law only explicitly names full-time and volunteer firefighters. As this committee knows, there are many references to firefighters and firefighting throughout statute. Not all are consistent. The legislature took a step towards creating consistency in 2024 by passing a law that established clear and distinct definitions for four firefighting positions: full-time, part-time, paid on-call, and volunteer. That background is important for context of this bill, because now it could be read that the benefit does not apply to part-time and paid-on-call firefighters, simply because they are not explicitly named. This bill aims to rectify that, to ensure we don't have a tragic situation in which a firefighter falls in the line of duty and is seen as not eligible for this benefit because of a technicality. This is very personal to me and my city. We faced a tragic death in 2022 of Assistant Chief James Scanlon, or Jimmy, I called him. He was a very good friend of mine. He was an excellent firefighter, and he was committed to his community. Jimmy is now on the Fallen Firefighter Memorial here in St. Paul. He's on the National Memorial in Emmitsburg. He meets the definition set by the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. But here's what the impact of this is right now. The impact is, because of the definition that's on here, his family is not receiving the state benefit, him and his four children, his wife and his four children. The national benefit is withheld until the state of Minnesota declares it a line of duty death. Tunnels to Towers is offering to get him a house for his family because they desperately need one, and they cannot move forward until we get a declaration on this. And then, you know, at the end of this is probably the most difficult time in the history of Minnesota to recruit paid-on-call firefighters. They put their lives on the lines all the time, and they need to know that the state of Minnesota has their backs when they go out that door, and that their family is going to be taken care of should they be hit by a car or die in a fire or have a heart attack when they're out doing their job. They get up from their family dinners. They leave their children's ballet. They do everything that they can for their communities, and they need to know that we have their backs. So at the end of the day, there's 90% of the state of Minnesota is paid on call or volunteer firefighters or part-time. That's about 15,000 firefighters in the state of Minnesota that are paid on call that don't have the assurance right now. So that's all we're looking for. So at the end of the day, our goal with this bill is to clarify statute so that this situation doesn't happen again. A line of duty death is already such a tragedy. Firefighters should not also have to contend with the uncertainty of whether their families would be provided for should the worst thing ever happen to them. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'm available for questions should the committee have any.
Thank you. I'm going to start with questions, Chief. I know the answer already, but I want to make it clear to the public. If it's a full-time firefighter that shows up at their crash or at their fire, or a paid-on-call firefighter, without being the inside knowledge or knowing who their personnel it is, are they going to know the difference between who is saving their family?
No. I was a paid-on-call firefighter only for 19 years, and I just became career like 3 years ago. They are trained exactly the same. They respond in the same manner as a full-time firefighter would. They just have a different job that they do during the day, and they give out from the bottom of their heart when they get home at night.
I think that's very important to notice. Members, are there any other questions? Representative Knutson, close. Oh, we have amendments, sorry. There are two amendments that were filed, A1 and A2. Would the author of the bill like me to move one of these amendments? And if so, which one?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like you to move the A1, please.
Representative Knutson moves the A1 amendment. Representative Knutson, could you describe the A1 amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. This amendment just excludes clerical, administrative, and non-manual from the definition of firefighter, which will bring down the cost, the overall cost of this bill. So the most important part of this is to getting our part-time and paid-on-call firefighters eligible for these benefits. So whatever we can do to make that happen is what we're doing.
Thank you. Members, any questions for the A1 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries and the amendment is adopted. Members, any questions on the bill as amended? Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Novotny. Thank you, Chair Knutson, for bringing this bill forward, and thank you, Fire Chief, for sharing those stories and just the impact that the volunteer and unpaid call firefighters have in our community, because they are working and they are serving also and doing a lot of great things. We heard yesterday on a bill by Representative Johnson on the effects of the cancer part, and some of these things go unnoticed, and I'm glad you're able to catch the loophole in this. So thank you very much for both bringing this forward.
Closing remarks.
Thank you, Public Safety Committee, for allowing us to hear this bill. It's just common sense, and it's about time that we include these firefighters in this benefit. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Knutson and Chief. The next bill on the agenda is House File. Then the bill is laid over. Next bill on the agenda is House File 3496. Representative Carter, please come to the table with your testifier. While Representative Carter is coming to the table, I remind members that we heard the bill a month ago, and there was concern raised about the language of the bill as introduced, so we laid the bill over. I will move House File 3496 before the committee. Representative Carter, would you like to recommend that the House File is House File 3496 is re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, Chair, that would be my motion. Thank you.
Representative Carter, you have a D1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment before the committee?
Yes, Chair Novotny, I will make the recommendation to move the DE amendment.
Please describe your amendment.
All right, the DE amendment is based upon work that I have done with the department, and she is here to describe it more in detail.
Good afternoon, Chair Novotny and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Safia Khan, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Corrections. I want to begin with expressing appreciation for Representative Carter for bringing this issue of restitution forward and for the care and thoughtfulness behind this legislation. In the few weeks since I was before you last on this bill, DOC and Representative Carter have worked together to address the feedback that we received from this committee on the earlier version of this bill. That feedback was also shared by our statewide Crime Victims Coalition. The result of that is the amendment before you, which represents a balanced approach. It strengthens the accountability for restitution payments while also recognizing the realities of a person's ability to pay. Most importantly, it directs attention toward those who have the means but are willfully choosing not to meet their obligations. That balance ensures that we are fair and ultimately effective in achieving the shared goal all of us have, ensuring accountability through restitution payments. In closing, I want to thank our statewide victim services coalitions for their feedback and guidance, and I want to thank Representative Carter again for her leadership and to the committee for your consideration. Hopefully this language addresses all the feedback that we received from the committee, and if you have any questions, I am happy to answer them.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Representative Carter or testifier on the amendment? All in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Motion carries and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Any further discussion on House File 3496 as amended? Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much to the DOC, to you, Representative Carter, for your work on this. Because when I first saw the original bill, I thought, I don't know if this can be salvaged, but I think I'm really glad that you've made these changes, and I think it's really good for victims. When I worked for one of the victim coalitions, we often heard about victims who were upset when restitution wasn't paid if they knew the offender had the ability to pay restitution, mm-hmm. right? And so I think this is really important for victims, and just, again, really appreciate your work on this to get the language right. Thank you.
Closing comments, Representative Carter.
Thank you, Chair Novotny, and for Safia Khan and your staff, and coalition that we work with. And thank you, members, for listening to the bill and for your feedback to make this bill better. Thank you again.
Representative Harder renews her motion that House File 3496, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries, and House File 3496, as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4151. Vice Chair Witte, please come to the testifier table with your testifier. Chair Witte, would you like to move House File 4151 before the committee with a recommendation that it is re-referred to the General Register?
That is my wish, Chair.
I see that you have an amendment coded A1. Would you like to move your amendment before the committee?
I would.
Please describe the A1 amendment.
I'll let you do that.
Greetings, Mr. Chair and committee members. The amendment has to do, I testified
please,
on this.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. Greg Cook with the Minnesota Board of Private Detectives and Protective Agents.
Then begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had testified on this bill on the Senate side last week, and they had a problem with just a couple of words before one of the definitions there, and I think it's 3.11 when it comes to the Minnesota manager. They basically wanted to say if it was needed. And so I don't have the exact language in front of me. Bear with me one second. So they want page 3, line 11, after manager to insert if one exists. So not in every situation do you have a Minnesota manager with the licensing. That is only if the licensee is out of state. Otherwise, it's just a qualified representative. So the language is to pertain to if they need a Minnesota manager.
All right. Are there any questions for the testifier or Chair Witte on the amendment? All in favor of accepting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Witte, to your bill.
Thank you. This is an agency bill for the Private Detective Board, and we're doing some cleanup to remove partnerships from several of the private directive boards. So, and I'll let my testifier explain a little bit more in detail.
Executive Director Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Greg Cook, Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Private Detectives and Protective Agents. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. Our board has unanimously voted in support for this bill. Our board chair, Rick Hodson, has provided a statement regarding the need for this bill, and because he has a prior commitment, he cannot be here, and he sends his thanks to the committee for considering this important legislation. I briefly wanted to highlight a few points about the need for this bill and answer any questions you may have. A very important component in the process of obtaining a private investigator or protective agent license is that the FBI fingerprint-based criminal background check be conducted to make sure we do not issue a license to someone who has been convicted of a disqualifying offense that is listed in the statute. The background check looks for certain disqualifiers as listed in those statutes that lets our agency know if the applicant meets those requirements. The actual process is separate from our agency as it is all conducted through the BCA. The BCA first runs a statewide check, then passes it on to the FBI NCIC, which is the National Crime Information Center, to do the national check. There are currently three types of licenses: individual, corporate, or partnership. We have no problems with getting the FBI results for individual licenses or the employees of license holders. The FBI does have an issue with us having access to FBI records for partnership or corporate license applicants. Under federal law, use of FBI records for licensing is only allowed if there is an explicit state statute language for such checks that is approved by the FBI. The FBI, more specifically the Criminal Justice Information Law Unit, has a problem with the current language in the definition in our statutes, specifically the term partnerships. They state that it is too broad of a definition to allow access to their database. Apparently, according to the FBI, the current statutory language does not meet the standards of Public Law 92-544. The board had thought they had fixed this issue by proposing a small change to the language in 2023, which you adopted and was signed into law. But the FBI has advised BCA that for partnerships and corporate license holders, the change was not good enough to address their concerns. Excuse me. As it was determined, the best legislative solution to this issue was to remove partnerships as a type of license and remove the word partnership from our statutes. We currently have no partnership types of licenses, license holders, and have had very few through the history of the board. For corporate license applicants, we listed out specifically those that are signing the corporate application who would be subject to the FBI background check. By expressly listing the corporate officers that must be backgrounded, it is our understanding the FBI will finally agree to allow us to meet the requirements that already exist for criminal record checks under state law. In order to get these applicants run through the FBI system, we need to get the language in our systems changed and our statutes changed, which is what this narrow bill is about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Executive Director Cook. Member questions for Vice Chair Witte or the Director? Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I appreciate this bill and I support it. And because this is my last year in the legislature, I just wanted to say that having talked to the board recently, it's known that there are people who hold themselves out as private security without going through the licensure requirement. And there's not a ton of enforcement action in the law. And I really wanted to come with a bill this year to address it. And there was just a lot going on. And it maybe had a cost, but I think it's a really important issue. I mean, obviously, after what happened, the events of this summer with someone holding themselves out as a security guard, and also and we know many people who need extra security, we want to make sure that those who are holding themselves out as security are licensed and are the best of the best. And so I am just putting that out there, and hopefully someone will take that on for the next session. Thank you.
Any other questions? Closing remarks, Chair Witte.
Thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you for your support.
Vice Chair Witte renews his motion to House File 4151 as amended, is re-referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries, and House File 4151 as amended is re-referred to the General Register. Members, we will be taking a 5-minute recess while we get something reset.
Well, in the
I'm just gonna. So I have a bill banning. Brad, I'm interested in your answer to this.
Where do you think they're at?
After this, we just have caucus set, right?
No floors. Have a bill banning lead ammunition over time, phasing it out, in response to Brittany, who you heard about her son.
Yeah.
It's obviously like after deadline, yada yada. Chris was like, where should it go? Here's where it's probably to go to. Public safety, commerce, environment, maybe judiciary. I was thinking about not sending it to public safety, maybe sending it to the environment, being like, you ammunition?
And the rockets.
I don't know. I just have to tell him.
Game ahead of
it may or may not get a hearing, but like.
Four, five, six.
That would be a stretch.
I've already let Sean know.
Like, they've been talking about the issue, not for this reason.
Change that.
They've been talking about the impact of lead on the environment.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. We at least want enough to get out of the game. Like, we guarantee
I think that's
not
right.
To follow.
I don't know if it's quite guaranteed.
I think everybody should.
Phoenix has lost a couple games recently. I think it's like.
The
same
way
the Lakers are pretty safely in the
I didn't see you come in.
Yeah, there's three games behind Houston, six. Four games behind us. But theoretically, if we just lose, if we lose out,
it's not locked in.
We have.
Right. The real gap is with the Clippers at 8. Is there any game on? So they'd have to win out. We have to lose out.
And they started to play well. And then got traded two or three from the team. And everybody was like, oh, they're giving up.
Everyone made fun of their coach when they were really bad, because the coach was like, our goal is to finish like 30 and 10 or 30 and 20. And the team was like, no way, they're gone.
No, I can't do those.
He wanted me to go, and I'm just like, wow.
Last time I went to one of Mancini's, I pushed people over to go.
You should. I had two. Are you taking off, Red? Okay.
Not a big deal, I guess.
I know. I don't.
I think he had
great plans. Yeah. I know this session was rough.
Yeah.
I'm like, where'd I park?
There's no president. Like
this is right. This is right.
There's only president.
Guys, I don't know why.
Dave's president. Or Pete. So May 20th.
I was wondering.
All right.
Chair?
Mr. Chair?
Who are we resetting?
The clock,
shot clock?
Yeah. No, we were waiting for.
Oh, we were resetting.
Thomas, I was wondering.
Yes.
On your behalf.
We were resetting the PCA.
You should.
I must be
our
witness.
Noble
superintendent. I mean,
they showed up late.
15 second warning.
A fraud.
I will call the meeting back to order. The next bill on the agenda is House File 3826. Vice Chair Witte, I see you're at the table with your testifier. We heard this bill 2 weeks ago. The bill also had committee stops at State, Gov, Finance, and Judiciary, where it was heard this morning. We don't have this bill back in our possession yet, but it is included in the Public Safety Committee's policy package. There were some issues with the bill's language that were brought up when we heard it in public safety, and I understand that these have been addressed and will be included in an amendment to the policy package. Vice Chair Witte, please update the committee on your bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Novotny and Chair Mueller. Working together with Superintendent Drew Evans and Representative Pinto, we were able to come up with the language that will satisfy, and I think it is the amendment that went on. We heard it in Judiciary today, and it went forward. And to keep my word, I promised to keep working on it to get it to the language it needed to. And I think if nonpartisan staff, Mr. Johnson, could talk about the changes, I think that was very helpful in Judiciary before we move forward for any questions.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment that was adopted in Judiciary today relates to the two provisions that are the administrative subpoena provisions. A few of you heard me say this morning, but at a high level, an administrative subpoena is a way that prosecutors can get evidence, usually in place of using a warrant. the changes that went in judiciary would establish the probable cause standard for issuing one of these administrative subpoenas. So before the prosecutor could issue an administrative subpoena, they would have to be in an active, ongoing criminal investigation, and there would have to be probable cause to believe that a crime had been committed.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I see that we have Superintendent Drew Evans here to update the committee as well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Evans. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Novotny, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Drew Evans, Superintendent of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I think as Representative Woody noted, and I'm grateful to continued work on this. What's most important, just to refresh the memory in your busy work, is that the subpoena authority in particular on this piece of the bill that we get access to these records as we work to combat all forms of fraud, both in our state government programs and then in the traditional financial sectors, insurance fraud, et cetera. These additional provisions that are put in will really greatly help us speed these through the process. And we're able to come to a place with our team on that where we think this will be a workable solution that we can work through. And what's most important is we gain access to those records to complement our investigations. But happy to answer any questions. We're just grateful this committee continues to work on this particular bill. And my great apologies to keep you all waiting. I promise I was working on your behalf here in the Capitol. So sorry about that.
Questions for Superintendent Evans. Closing comments, Vice Chair Whitty.
I just want to reiterate again, thanks to Representative Pinto for working with myself and Commissioner Evans to make this bill. I think that's what makes them stronger. And I just appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Whitty and Superintendent Evans. Next bill on our agenda is House File 4425. Representative Myers, please come to the table. And your testifier, Superintendent Evans, is already there. Representative Myers, I move that your House File 4425 be before the committee. Representative Myers, the fiscal note has not been completed on this bill, but House Fiscal has informed us that the Department of Corrections says there's no prison bed impact, so I will recommend that your bill is re-referred to the General Register. Representative Myers, please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Novotny, Chair Moeller, members. House File 4425 is a bill to strengthen accountability when public dollars are stolen. This bill is not about creating new crimes. It's not about rewriting Minnesota fraud laws. It does one practical thing. It gives prosecutors more time in complex public fraud cases by extending the statute of limitations from 6 years to 10 years. Why does this matter? These matter because the cases a lot of times to uncover, to investigate, and fully develop can take a long time. When public funds are involved, the conduct can be layered, document-heavy, spread across multiple agencies and entities, and other, you know, take several years. This isn't about replacing administrative recovery, civil enforcement audits, agency oversight. It's a complementary tool that we're looking to give our departments more opportunities. This bill is bipartisan in the Senate, and I look forward to your support on what is, I believe, a small but meaningful option to help address fraud here in Minnesota.
Superintendent Evans, identify yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Novotny and members of the committee. Again, my name is Drew Evans, the Superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And as we've discussed relative to the last bill that was just before your committee and talked about the other day, fraud is a complex investigative process. The investigations themselves sometimes can take 3 to 5 years once we're actively working on the case because obviously fraudsters take great lengths to cover up their tracks. And so it is often a paper process that we engage and go through to be able to work on those investigations. For us as investigators, any lengthening of statute of limitations is valuable to us in terms of being able to bring a viable case and ensure those people, in this particular instance, those that wish to defraud defraud us as the taxpayers and misuse our public funds to ensure that we have the time frame necessary, even if they're identified at, you know, many years later, that we can hold them accountable for those crimes and not be limited based on the statute of limitations. So how this would work, it'd be a little bit longer than the bill we had before. You know, I just, in interest, because we're just hearing that bill, that 7 years was picked somewhat, I don't want to call it arbitrary, it was looked at in the terms line of what we see for cases and when it may have been identified. Certainly in an instance like this, you know, 10 years from an investigative standpoint, the more time the better for us. It doesn't drag out our cases, but ensures we have the time frame to hold people accountable when those frauds might be discovered.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Myers or Superintendent Evans? Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Superintendent, for addressing that, because we were wondering, too, why Representative Witte's bill we just heard went to 7 years, and then this bill goes to 10. Are the crimes different enough that they need to have two different statute of limitations?
Superintendent Evans.
Chair Novotny and Chair Mueller, you know, I think that's a policy question in some ways for all of you to decide, but as to answer your question specifically, what I would say when it comes to the state or this particular public funds, you know, the volume of data and information that we are working through as a state, certainly the more time, because something may be uncovered, a scheme that we may not have identified for a number of years, that more time would be different. If you recall from our bill, it is a broader set of circumstances that would often be in traditional frauds that may be outside of the public government, where records may not be kept quite as long, is why we went to that. We don't want to be unduly burdensome on private businesses to be able to defend themselves if a fraud was occurring. In this case, many of these records would be available in the public funds situations where we'd be able to backtrack. But it obviously would be a bit of a policy discussion for you to all have.
Co-Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I do think that the Representative Norris Attorney General bill also maybe had some statute of limitation changes in it, House File 2354. And I wonder if Mr. Johnson can describe how that one maybe differs from these two that we just heard.
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Novotny and Chair Mueller. That bill makes a conforming change only, so there's a current statute that's the theft of Medicaid fund, and the Norris bill repeals that statute and replaces it with a new bill, so that's just a conforming change. That bill would also create a concept of an ongoing crime, which would allow for some additional look back period when it becomes evident that someone has been engaging in an ongoing pattern of committing fraud over a period of time. It would allow people to look back sort of toward the beginning of that period.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I guess I wonder if with the ongoing nature, the look back period, then does it mean that you don't need a change in the statute of limitations? Is it essentially doing the same thing?
Mr. Johnson.
Chair Novotny and Chair Mueller, I would say that they are doing similar things, but not exactly the same thing. The statute of limitations would apply if, for example, the fraud ended at a particular date and then there was nothing else that was ongoing. Then the statute of limitations would begin to run and would run for, depending on which path goes, 6, 7, or 10 years. If, however, there is an ongoing pattern and it is identified within that statute of limitations period, that's where the Representative Norris bill would open the door to essentially calling in the older offenses that could have occurred before that 6, 7, or 10 year look back period, wherever the limitations are.
Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly support this bill and plan to support it. I just think it's important that before we'd like maybe consider all these things too as we move these bills out and before they get to the floor. So we're just consistent. Thank you.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Myers, for the bill. And I think just in the conversation of when we're looking at how many years we can look back, we might want to take a look at the records retention schedules that are out there and if we need to make some changes to that as well. My guess is that a seven-year number, putting my HR hat on from back in the day, sounds like it's probably a records retention related. So I think as we move forward, we should take a look at how those stand right now and how we might need to change those so that the records are available, like you said.
Any response to that, Superintendent Evans or Representative Myers?
I can, Chair Novotny, and I think it's an excellent point. And, you know, for us and many state agencies, as we're developing our records retention schedules, one of the things we do look at is the statute of limitations. So, like, we have that for all of our evidence and records that we keep for our criminal investigations. We mirror those to the statute of limitations, so you're right. We likely have to update some of those, but the state agencies do that and examine what the state laws are, what they might need to retain for that period.
Representative Kern. Any other questions for the testifiers or Superintendent Evans? Closing comments, Representative Myers.
Thank you, members, chairs. You know, at the end of the day, I always try to bring forward options and opportunities. And I think, you know, fraud has gotten big enough here in Minnesota that we need to look at what we can get over the finish line. And, you know, in a tied house, we're trying to bring multiple options and opportunities. And I think this is one of those. I mean, this is a bill that is about accountability, public trust, and making sure that misuse of public funds does not go unaddressed simply because the clock ran out. So I would ask members for your support.
Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 4425 is re-referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries and House File 4425 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Myers and Superintendent Evans. The last bill on our agenda today is House File 3990. House File 3990 is the House Public Safety Committee package of policy-only bills. Chair Mueller moved the bill before the committee yesterday. House nonpartisan staff walked through the delete all amendment that includes individual provisions in this bill, and the committee took up testimony. We will consider amendments to the delete all amendment today, then re-refer the bill to the General Register. I move House File 3990 back before the committee. Chair Mueller, would you like to move the D1 amendment to House File 3990?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move the DE1 amendment.
We will now entertain a series of amendments. The first amendment is A3. Representative Curran, would you like to move the A3 amendment?
Yes, so moved, Chair.
And the A3 amendment is from the language of House File 3870. Are there any questions for Representative Curran on the A3 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. The next amendment is the A5. The A5 is also Representative Curran's amendment. Would you like to move that amendment, Representative Curran?
Yes, Chair. This is the amendment that makes technical changes to some DOC bills.
In the A5 language from House File 3868, are there any questions for Representative Curran on the A5 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A5 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries and the amendment is adopted. The next amendment is the A7. Representative Tadke, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
The A7 amendment is language from House File 3155. Any questions for Representative Tabke on the A7 amendment? All in favor of Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate it if Representative Tabke could just explain what it is that the underlying or the bill that's in the amendment, what it does.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Chair Novotny. Representative Hudson, Representative Greenman is very excited that you asked me a question. So we'll. This is the bill we heard and unanimously moved forward last night. So this is a gift card bill that what is happening is the there are folks. This adds language into the organized retail theft bill. And so there are folks that are taking gift cards and they're opening them and getting the data off of them, putting them back on the shelf. And then when someone purchases them and puts money on a gift card, they are then sealing that money that gets added to a gift card. And so this makes the value, attempts the value, this adjusts the value of a gift card so that people are able to be convicted for actually stealing money. And so it's moved it forward last night to the General Register on a unanimous vote. So I just appreciate everybody's support today.
Representative Hudson.
I'm good.
Last call. All in favor of adopting the A7 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the A7 amendment is adopted. The next amendment is the A8. The A8 amendment is Chair Moeller's. Chair Moeller, would you like to move the A8 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair, and I can just briefly explain that this came from the domestic violence bill that we heard, House File 3946. All of the changes here were ones that are already in the bill that we amended in this committee. The only change that you'll see now is pushing the effective date on line 2.26 out to 2028. In the original fiscal note, all of these changes had a cost. But my understanding is the BCA is going to be like reworking their system, and so if we push this out a year, this could just be these factor points could be worked into the system when they redo it. So we pushed it out a year to eliminate the cost.
Any question for Chair Moeller on the A8 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A8 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. Next amendment is the A10. Vice Chair Witte, would you like to move the A10 amendment?
That's my wish.
The A10 amendment is from the Private Detective Board. Vice Chair Witte, could you give us a brief discussion of your description of your amendment?
Yep, it's the bill we just heard. It updates the statute to remove private detective partnerships.
Any questions for Vice Chair Witte on the A10 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A10 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. Next amendment is the A12. The A12 amendment is from Chair Moeller. Chair Moeller, would you like to move the A12 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. These are the remaining policy provisions of that domestic violence bill, House File 3946. There are a couple of changes based on stakeholder input and feedback since we last heard this in committee. The main ones here are line 2.19. We had in the original bill eliminated the 72-hour requirement for misdemeanor arrests in these cases. We had it open-ended, and that was problematic for a number of reasons. So we have it at 28 days now. I will say the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers wants it to be shortened a little more, so I am in continued discussions with them on that. And then the other provision, or the main change, is that beginning at line 3.23, that subdivision regarding detaining someone until they can be seen in front of a judge also was problematic to some of the stakeholders. So we instead put a number of factors that need to be considered for that release, and then we matched those over for judges when they're determining bail amounts and pretrial release conditions at line 5.9 to 5.15. I think that those are the main changes we had since this bill was in committee. It'll be heard in judiciary tomorrow as well.
Thank you. Any questions for Chair Moeller on the A12 amendment? All in favor of adopting the A12 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the A12 amendment is adopted. Next amendment is the A-15. Vice Chair Witte, would you like to move the A-15 amendment?
Yes, please, Chair.
Vice Chair Witte, could you explain the Vice Chair amendment?
This requires probable cause for administrative subpoenas. We just heard testifying from Superintendent Drew Evans. We heard it in Judiciary, and I've worked with Representative Pinto, and he's helped fix this, so I believe it's up to your standard.
Any questions for Vice Chair Witte on the A-15 amendment? Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, no questions, but just a comment to thank both the BCA and Representative Witte for the work on this. It takes, it strikes an appropriate balance in making sure that we can get access to needed records and also protecting civil liberties, and makes parallels existing law and makes that happen. So I would urge support. Thank you.
Any other questions for Representative or Vice Chair Witte? Vice Chair Witte.
I do appreciate the work on that. I went through the different committees, and the phone call, I realized I was not the smartest person on the call on this issue. So I did appreciate their input. Thank you.
All in favor of adopting the A-15 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Motion carries, and the amendment is adopted. The final amendment is the A-17. That is my amendment. The A-17, I move the A-17 before the committee. It makes changes to the underlying bill of this package. It allows the hiring of licensing authority to or a licensing authority to deny an applicant unless the person can show evidence of rehabilitation and fitness. This is similar to the current standard, but it eliminates the thou shall not construction that implies that it is that this analysis is more of a ministerial duty than one in which is the hiring licensing authority can exercise discretion. It divides the two standards into two clauses. This avoids the concern that rehabilitation and present fitness is a single concept in current law. It eliminates the phrase to be established by the production of. This directly addresses the ruling by the Court of Appeals that allows a person to show rehabilitation and fitness by producing proof of an honorable discharge or proof of a completion of sentence and a year without a new offense. Specifically, it includes the word both to emphasize that a person must meet both prongs, that the hiring and licensing authority can consider the listed evidence for both purposes. That is my bill, and there has been considerable work going back and forth, and I am absolutely amazed at the speed and the cooperation between the people that were stakeholders in this that were able to get this done, and thank the staff on both sides that were able to work through this in the last 24 hours. Are there any questions to the amendment? All in favor of adopting the A-17, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. And the motion carries and the amendment is adopted. That is all the amendments to the DE-1. Members, do we have any discussion on House File 3990 as amended? Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just extend my appreciation as well to staff for their hard work in getting all these amendments together, and also our partisan staff as well do really good work. And it's been a pleasure working with you on this bill as well. And I'm glad we have a not every committee is going to have an omnibus bill, and I'm glad we'll have a policy package to present. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I'm so sorry speaking after my chair, but I just wanted to note I want to thank both chairs. This session especially, it's extremely impressive to have a bill like this passing through a committee at this point in session. Like that is not something that we should be minimizing in any way. So thank you, Chair Novotny. Thank you, Chair Mueller. It is a testament to the staff that you're working with as well. Fabulous staff, partisan and nonpartisan. But I think that all the members of the committee are very grateful to you and very impressed with the fact that this is passing out today. So thank you to both.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Well, we don't know if we're going to have a budget target, so we might be back or we might not. Chair Mohler, would you like to renew your motion to adopt the DE1 amendment to the House file as amended?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries and the D1 amendment as amended is adopted. I renew my motion that House File 3990 as amended is re-referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion prevails and House File 3990 as amended is re-referred to the General Register. There being no further business for the committee today, the committee is adjourned till further notice.